from Saratoga Racecourse, back home in, well, Washington County and Saratoga County, for the duration now, straight through to Labor Day. I'm sure we'll be, you know, little day trip or two into Vermont, but otherwise our wanderings, I think, have come to an end for the summer season until September, when we'll head to Kentucky for the first couple of weeks. But great to be home, and really just an amazing, I'm blending what went on this past week with the vacation, really. I mean, because it's all a blur. And when we added up, Tina and I were laughing driving home, and we were adding up the kind of adventure we really kind of had. The state total between July 2nd and yesterday, so July 28th, we were in 15 different states. It's pretty nuts. So much fun, and it's been a wild week with, you know, really going back to Haskell and then getting down to Virginia and kind of the surprise magic that happened with Keswick. And another plug for them, and happy that our friend Rob McNamara, who invited us and really took ill, felt terrible, he's better. And so one more big thank you to Rob and Deb Easter and everybody at Keswick. And we'll get, maybe Rob will be back up this summer for, you know, for a couple of days, and I want to get him on to talk about the facility. Amazing. The Pete Dye Golf Course, which I'm looking forward to getting on. Ideally not when it's 103 degrees, but did I talk about the meal we had at Marigold, a Jean-Georges production? Amazing. Just an amazing 24 hours or so. I got a little pool time in. I mean, everywhere we go, Tina carries a kiddie pool, a blow-up pool, because if there's no pool, she's going to fashion her own. And then Chincoteague with the pony swim, crazy. Yesterday at Delaware, and the fun we had, and it really was opportune, because to be able to pay tribute and honor John Mooney's career, that was very timely with his career coming to a close. I'm sure he'll do some consulting. Everybody gets to that juncture in the racing industry, and they do some consulting. But JJ and Tony Black, we had so much fun. Everybody that came through, too. Andy Simoff, and by the way, that Capriotti sandwich, the sub that he brought, and our friend Tom Herman, he brought that we'll have tonight, Tina and I. He brought us cheesesteak ingredients. So we'll have that tonight. But that sandwich, which apparently Sean Clancy called me because he heard what was going on, and put Sean Clancy in the loves Andy Simoff category. But Sean says that sandwich is called the Bobby, the turkey sandwich with provolone, French dressing, and coleslaw. Unbelievable. So Andy Simoff wasn't lying. We really enjoyed that on the drive home. We stopped in Brooklyn, saw Spencer, and had a fabulous dinner at Monte Sacro in Brooklyn. I'm running, I think, on adrenaline a little bit, just because it's been so frenetic, starting with, you know, with the Monmouth run. But happy to be home, and what a terrific weekend we've got. The one venue I didn't mention so far in this open is Colonial. And there's news regarding Colonial that came yesterday from a CDI shareholder call, as it were, Bill Carstangen, noting that with Colonial's date system, that is essentially a regulatory statute, that, and Jill Byrne has talked about this, one race day for every 100 HHR machines. And so with 5,000, essentially, 5,000 HHR machines, 50 days will need to be run at Colonial. And so they're going to start to ratchet, and Jill hinted at this, and you know, in the conversation we had when the meet started, and then again last week, or this week, Tuesday, when we talked. So Colonial is going to be even more of a fixture, and we'll get a feel. I don't think they're necessarily obligated. They're certainly not obligated to run, you know, the 50 dates consecutively, you know, over the course of however many weeks, and you know, during a season, they see if there's some interest. I mean, certainly a fall, you know, a fall session at Colonial could be unbelievable, you would think. So we'll get keep an eye on that, and we'll talk to Jill Byrne the next opportunity. And the other news, racetrack related and involving meets and dates, came yesterday right here from the New York Racing Association, where the rumored, and it wasn't certain that this was going to happen, based on the timing of the construction that's begun at Belmont to build the tunnel, to create the tunnel to access the infield and the infrastructure that's going to be necessary with that, you know, portion of the, you know, the early stages of renovating Belmont Park and winterizing it, and however the track portion of the decision making you know, is made, and how it turns out, the first order of business is that infrastructure, and as a result, the aqueduct fall meet is upon us when we break camp from here at Saratoga. Pat McKenna is going to come by, and we'll also, I imagine, get Dave O'Rourke. I don't know if Dave's available this morning. There he is. Nick Sinigata. Nicky. Nicky Gaga, as Tony calls him. we'll get the details from Pat, at least, here. And then Dave O'Rourke is going to join us on Loose on the Lead on TV on Sunday. So we'll get, I'll table that for now, and we'll discuss it with Pat when he comes by between now, and it could be right before 10. It could be after 10, after Jay Privman makes his triumphant return. Jay with a vacation, and I haven't talked to him yet about attending the British Open. So I was certainly going to get a little bit in from Jay on his vacation. And then, of course, it's home game time, Del Mar, for Jay. And obviously it's a big between the summer and then getting through the Del Mar meet. Looking forward to start conversation. We, of course, had Brad Free to kick it off last week. They've got a terrific set of stakes. And tomorrow, the San Diego, in particular, came up very interesting between Mandaloon invading with Florent Giroux, and then, of course, the presence of, you know, the top older handicap males, like, well, Country Grammar, last seen, you know, winning the World Cup, and Tripoli for John Sadler, who, if he can, you know, get back to the lightning in the bottle, 6-1, actually. Mandaloon's 4-1. I imagine that comes down a couple of ticks. You think he's going to be a close second choice behind Country Grammar. Anyway, we'll talk to Jay. Royal Ship is in there as well. And there goes Harvard, who's emergent. Last time we talked to Michael W. McCarthy, we talked about There Goes Harvard. And he, if there's an aspirant in here, it's probably There Goes Harvard. The Bing Crosby, though, the grade one. And this group also kind of eclectic, and yeah, there isn't necessarily an obvious. I mean, when I went through it this morning, and I actually landed on Brendan Walsh with the 8-1 bag boss. Bag boss improves at all from the last. He's absolutely eligible to win this grade one. It's an interesting group. Shaz, 7-2 morning line favorite for Baffert, and actually Country Grammar, of course, too. Country Grammar seems to me to be a little bit like weigh the horse to beat, but we'll get some wider opinions. Scott Shapiro is going to join us first, actually, in about 5 minutes to kick off some of the handicapping, and we'll see what Shap landed on. But the Bing Crosby, drain the clock in here in front of the Slam Dunk faithful. Let's get lucky. One of my favorite expressions. Siaka taught me that one, actually. Brian Corner sending out Let's Get Lucky. Just always seems to run an A race, a cowbred that has, in fact, I don't think he's ever missed a board. He's never missed a board. Yeah, I noticed that this morning. 6-1 with Tyler Bays and away since April. So some clocking notes will be helpful when we get down to brass tacks handicapping the Del Mar action. The maiden races, of course, as well. We got to talk about a couple of interesting maiden group. The 2-year-olds, the third and the sixth. The sixth on the main track, 5.5. And no obvious, unless I guess Newgate will be favored, but the $850,000 Into Mischief for SF and team, but there's a couple of others. There's actually a 20-1 shot that I'm a little intrigued by. Jeff Mullins has got Midnight Taxes, the Midnight Loot Colt that is a half to Amalfi Coast, and in fact that's a mare. Include Catherine, the Include Dam. She has had 9 foals that have produced 39 wins. Yeah, quite something. All winners, and Amalfi Coast being the best. So the Del Mar action after the huge opening weekend, and of course they ran yesterday, and we'll get to that coverage from Jay. The Fleet Treat, the stake yesterday. Today they'll run the Daisy Cutter, and it was Fun to Dream for Baffert, and one that that Jill owns with Connie Pagler. This a Arrogate filly, and she romped at she made 6-5 look good. So today you're looking at Daisy Cutter's. Daisy Cutter's a good feature. Twilight Gleaming out there for Wesley Ward, and last seen winning the Mamzelle after Derby. Oaks weekend. So, Del Mar, terrific. Jay Pribman and Scott Shapiro shortly. We're going to slip in a visit with Callie Francois, and Callie's got some family. There was a sadness in the family, and she's home in Nebraska, and I don't think she'll be on track tomorrow for the stakes at Laurel, but you do have a very nice set of 5 stakes tomorrow. So we're going to touch on it. You get the Miss Disco, the Jamila, the Deputed Testimony, the Open Company Mile and an Eighth, the Ben's Cat with a group of 8, and the Star to Nascra. So if you didn't notice, Laurel's got themselves a nice little stake card. And then, of course, there's everything going on here. And today, the Curlin, which is always treated as a slight curiosity, the day before the Jim Dandy. It's really, horses that are auditioning for Travers, and invariably horses that are, getting a gauge on where they are. In some cases, a horse like Creative Minister in there today for Kenny McPeak is kind of, regrouping. If you forgot, he was third in the Preakness, and then really didn't really do any didn't do any advancing anyway in the Belmont, beaten 12, but just kind of, you know, held his ground all the way around one paced. So he comes back to the 9-furlong trip, creative minister, Dylan Davis aboard. You've got potentially some emergent horses. Artorias. In fact, Chad Brown's got an interesting weekend because he's got two, you know, seemingly poised types. Artorias in here today with Errat Ortiz on the outside, who's 7-2. And then when you get to Sunday's card and the Amsterdam, the prep for the Alan Jerkins, he's got that first out winner, Accretive, who, I mean, if he runs back to the debut, absolutely. And then, of course, Chad Poised in the Jim Dandy with early voting in Zandon, kind of a front and back end threat. Early voting, if Epicenter, this is going to be the interesting discussion point today. Nick Tamaro in Hour 3, of course, and Scully, we'll get Scully's thoughts. Dave Grenick's tied up. Mike Welch should stop by between Morning Works on the Main and going over to the other side for Turf Works later this morning. So we might catch Mike and get a couple of advance thoughts on how the principals in the Jim Dandy are coming into it. Western River, I'm kind of assuming that I've not actually heard if what Rudy Brissett has decided, but Western River, who's cross-entered, of course, today in the Curlin, but Epicenter, 3-2, Tawny Port, 8-1, then the two Chads, and of course, Chad also with an opportunity in the Bowling Green on Sunday, too. So it could be almost every weekend could be a huge Chad Brown weekend, and this no exception. But particularly with a couple of lightly raced horses that, you know, are burgeoning, perhaps, and that could start as early as 4:18 today with the Curlin. The rest of that group, interesting. It's an interesting collection. It always is. This Curlin is. It's such a curiosity over the years, because everybody juxtaposes it with the Jim Dandy the next day, and, you know, wonders, well, why wouldn't these? Well, because, you know, in the case of McPeak's other horse, Wolf County, the Medaglia d'Oro, homebred for Joe Murphy, they want to see where they stand with the horse. And, you know, this is a restricted stake, so, you know, non-winners of a sweepstakes, and so it's a fun condition. It always has been. And, you know, you get a horse like, you know, Creative Minister, grade one placed, and Golden Glider for Mark Cassie and the Conrads and Gary Barber. So there's a little bit of everything. Be Better in here as well. Two wins at Monmouth in June and July for Pletcher and Mike Rapoli. Rapoli homebred. He's testing the water. So it's a fun, interesting group. Safi Joseph brings AP Secret, the horse that, you know, seemed like the mojo in the Texas Derby. That didn't come off, but he does continue to, you know, look like he's progressive. Really interesting group. You've also got Todd Pletcher taking over Make It Big for Red Oak, for the Brunettis. This is a horse that Safi Joseph had and last seen in the Sam Davis. And if you forgot, this was the Springboard Mile winner going back to last year. So a fun group in the Curlin. I'm going to, as soon as the show's over, I'll put up the selections for the 6th through the 10th. We'll do that late pick 5 and going to get into the steady beat. It's been a little hectic to get all the analysis up. So let's, Case, let's reach for Scott and get Scott Shapiro in here. And there he is. He's waiting in the wings like a viper, like a mongoose you were waiting in there to jump in. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. Overly anxious. The racing this weekend has me excited, especially what we've got to see from Del Mar, as you highlighted, with the tremendous start to the meet. And seems like more to come. Yesterday was good. Today's competitive. And tomorrow's outstanding.
What, going back to last weekend, and forgive me if I forgive me if my memory is blurry about everything we did when I was at Monmouth and we were going into Haskell weekend. Your early impressions of last weekend and basically these first 4 days of racing.
Yeah, I mean, the field sizes have been great. I mean, hats off to David Jerkins in the racing office for really bringing things together. You know, Del Mar always gets off to a good start, but it definitely seems like this year extra juice with the ship and win, a lot of horses seemingly ready to come back off layoffs, and it's been a lot of fun. The turf course to me, opening weekend, always a highlight. When the rails are in, I just enjoy watching horses finish. You don't see that many courses here in the States where coming from off the pace is an advantage, and feels that way when the rails are out there, especially over that fresh course. Tough sequences, big payouts, and one thing is Umberto Rispoli, who struggled there last year, came here to Kentucky to try things out. Didn't give it a lot of time here. I understand why, but seems like he made the right decision heading back to Southern California. He has been riding that turf course outstanding, and it's something to keep an eye on. You know, we could talk all day about whether how much jockeys matter in given races, but when there's a turf course, especially where the rails are out sometimes, you need to save ground and make moves at the right time, which is the case at Del Mar. Being able to ride, effectively is key, and you'll see so many guys struggle over that course all summer long, and some guys like Pratt used to do, and Rispoli did in the past, really take advantage, and he's riding exceptional. Hard to leave off your tickets on that turf course right now.
Well, and that's always been fun to watch, and there's some places where chandelier moves don't work, and then there's other places like Del Mar where that swoop, off the turn and starting to engage and come running and then past the chute opening and the momentum very often. It is interesting because. And I'll get Jay Pridman, too, to discuss it. When you got a horse that is trying to save ground and there isn't necessarily, room for the inside-outside trip, I mean, you've got to... So it just has always seemed to me you've got to be, extra best when you're holding, waiting for room and trying to rally inside that way at Del Mar.
Without question, and a lot of times it can be frustrating. If you don't get through, obviously you feel like you had the best horse, but in the end, Corey Nakatani, a guy, Kent Stormo that did it the best down there.
Yep.
It was just in my life, and you're going to get caught on the rail from time to time, but in the end, those are the winning moves over that turf course, without question.
Well, if you got a couple for today, and then we'll launch into the big weekend card.
Yeah, a couple for today. The Daisy Cutter, as you mentioned, pretty fun race. 5 furlongs, sprinting, fillies and mares. And you mentioned Twilight Gleaming returning, as well as Legs Galore. Twilight Gleaming, I thought, very underwhelming in the Momzelle on May 14th at Churchill, when on paper she looked like she could win for fun at 1-5, and she was all out the whole off. But an okay field, nothing that I'm overly enthusiastic about. Now freshened up by Wesley, and been racing over the training over the Saratoga turf, ships out. I think she's vulnerable. I wouldn't be shocked if he, he's had a lot of success out there, like he has everywhere, Wesley, that is. And then Legs Galore, it'll be interesting. You're off a little bit of a layoff after trying to adjust the game. Now 5 furlongs after the 1 mile race. You wonder if her speed, A, is even as effective at 5 furlongs in general. She does have the 3-for-3 record at the distance, but that was a while ago. You wonder if she's going to be as sharp, or maybe some of that speed will be taken a little bit out of her coming out of a mile race. But I think they both have a chance, but not going to be the price I'm looking for. I thought number 4, She's So Nice, had a big look in here. Phil D'Amato winning a lot of big races thus far at Del Mar, as expected. She's going to have to relax. She was a horse that didn't need the lead or wasn't on the lead in her first three starts in the States, but the last couple she's been on the lead. I don't think she needs the lead. She gets Umberto Rispoli for the first time, who I just spoke of. I think if she can sit just off the early pace setters, likely Legs Galore, Twilight Gleaming amongst them, I think she can bring a potential upset here at 8-1.
Nice. She's so nice, and I, you know, I was a little remiss not getting Phil on the show this week after, you know, his two nice stake wins opening weekend. But we'll get Phil D'Amato on undoubtedly soon enough. So yeah, Rispoli, and what, Rispoli two more yesterday, right? Yeah, the opener for Quinn Howie, and then the nightcap for Andy Mathis.
Yep, both on the front end. So it's. You know, when I think of him, I think mostly of a guy that's going to come from off the pace, relax his horse, and finish. But he knows that course well at this point, and knows, you know, when the rails are out, you got to be a little bit more aggressive. And they were out 24 feet yesterday, and they will be again today. And then the seventh, I thought there was a lot of speed in here, which should set things up for number four. She's Bulletproof. Now, this daughter of Idiot Proof has never raced on the dirt, never gone two turns for Peter Miller, but comes out of two open company allowance events at Santa Anita down the hill, and now stretches out the bottom side to me. You know, dirt should be fine for this one, at least I'm hoping so, and should get a favorable race shape at 5-1 with Florent Giroux picking up the mount for Peter Miller, who's off to a little bit of a slow start, has had a bunch of seconds. No, only one win thus far, I believe.
All right, so the four in the seventh, that's the Calbred first level allowance going the flat mile.
Yes, sir.
That's the, and there you go. That's the, so that's the Friday action.
Yes, sir. And then Saturday was just, I would argue, maybe the best card thus far. Opening day was fun. Saturday, you know, the first Saturday was good, but you mentioned the stakes action's good. There's some maiden races. You want to start with the maidens? You want to start with an early play?
Yeah, go. Yeah, start. Let's do it. Let's do it in timing order. And before we do it, let's also give everybody the weekend preview presented by Twin Spires. Let's also let's give them the action on the platform as well. Some of the opt-ins.
Sounds good. A couple of note: the Exacta insurance offer, where you get your bet back if your two selected horses finish in the first three, but not in the winning order. Saturday, the action's at Del Mar, races 8, 9, and 10, with the 8th being the Bing Crosby, the 10th being the San Diego, so wide open races there. And then Sunday, it'll be at Saratoga. The races will be up a little later on both the app and the website. So the Exacta insurance offer, as always, remember to opt in. Once you opt in once, you're set for life. And then Saratoga Betback continues, Steve. Thursday through Saturday, all meet long. Get up to $10 back on your win bet if your horse runs second in any of the selected races. Today's races are 4, 7, 8, and 10. And then tomorrow's Vanderbilt card, it'll be races 6, 7, 10, and 11. And again, remember to opt into those.
Excellent. All right.
And then to the action here. Race three, you mentioned a couple of good maiden special weights on tomorrow's card, one on the dirt, and then this one. Race three is a two-turn turf event, two-year-old fillies. And I like number four, Green-Eyed Lady, quite a bit here. Won't be a great price or anything. One of two horses I expect to take a bunch of money, but Michael McCarthy, certainly not known, Whitey not known for winning with firsters very often, although he did on opening day with a Calbred. But this one got hammered in an eight-horse field on debut, going off at 8-5, showing that somebody liked this one. And she got off to a pretty slow start, made a huge wide move on the turn before tiring and finishing third to a wire-to-wire winner. Now stretches out the two turns, the daughter of Oscar Performance, bred on both sides to get the added ground, especially on the bottom side. And with Florent Giroux jumping aboard with a better break, I would expect this one to be prominent early and tough to catch late at 3-1.
All right, Green Eyed Lady.
And then the other maiden special, he stole my thunder. with the Arkansas
really, with
bread.
The, yeah. Oh, that's great. The, okay.
Midnight Taxes. Yeah, I mean, yep. Look, the Baffert horses, hard to figure, in Newgate, both mentioned in the two-year-old DRF article that Brad Free did. So, you know, you would expect them to be big players in here. Both have worked well, both solid pedigrees. Johnny V jumping aboard Newgate for that first start. I couldn't believe 40% Johnny V and Baffert together over the last 108 starts. Pretty impressive, positive ROI. But, you know, everybody's going to be able to come up with them. But, yeah, you stole my thunder on the 20-1 shot Midnight Taxes. Damn, include Catherine. Very productive, as you mentioned. 9 starters, all have won multiple races. 8 of them have earned 6 figures. And Jeff Mullins, just 12% with 2-year-old firsters at the special weight level, but a positive ROI of 239 in over the recent sample size. So that one, maybe we won't get our 20-1 if we both landed on it, but a little bit sneaky in what looks like a very fun race.
Agreed. And nothing, what was interesting to me, I mean, here's a 5.5 furlong, you know, sprint, and there was really nothing that, you know, kind of grabbed you by the lapels. I mean, usually when you start going through pedigrees and you're looking for fast siblings or the dam, certainly. And you know, I should mention, going back to the turf mile, the third, Todd Fincher's got that horse on the rail, Bold Connection, who's a half to Sweet Loretta, who was a very nice stake horse, and she moves to the grass and she stretches out. It's kind of an interesting package, and I want to do some more stats for tomorrow to see, because Fincher is very good with second timers, so I'm curious about going dirt to turf, but that was one pedigree note when it came to the third race. But no, I guess the only other horse I'll mention is that 11, who is Odonata for Doug O'Neill. This happens to be a New York bred. I always find this curious when the New York breds end up in California. It's usually it's a Redham production when that happens. this is a lay of band that is a half to Munachi, who, you know, people around here will recall, who was very nice. So there's at least a you know, a little bit of pedigree power and second timer and blinkers go on. So I thought that Odonata was worth noting at 10-1.
Yeah, and you meant Todd Fincher. I mean, what an effort was put forth. The name is escaping me at the moment for that New Mexico bred, beating the two Bafferts, Grace Adler and Midnight Memories, and Mark Glatz Dance to the Music in that pretty soft allowance of Mark. Yes.
Slammed.
Yes, I mean, that was slammed. That was an absolute clinic. I mean, it helped the Dance to the Music. The other speed didn't get out of the gate, but I don't think they were beating that horse no matter what happened yesterday. So, yeah, good points on the Fincher running. Definitely the added ground. The turf, to me, a little bit of a question mark.
Those are the two maiden races, the third and the sixth, and then the late pick five, second level allowance, a turf sprint, then the Crosby, then there's a mile turf first level allowance, optional claimer, the San Diego, and the card closes with a maiden for fillies and mares going a mile on the grass. What do you see in this pick five? Pick anything you want. If you want to do them all or just hit the highlights.
Well, I could just breeze it through the seventh. I don't have an overly strong opinion, but I did pick Whooping Jay first off the claim for Bill Spahr, 2-for-5 over the course with 2 seconds. Last time out, I thought ran pretty well in a race where off-the-pace runner, Southern Horse, got the best of the two speed horses. Now cutting back. 5 furlongs, maybe a little shorter, but lukewarm top selection. Whooping Jay also will use Chasing Money and Lane Way amongst maybe a few others, but not an overly strong opinion. But the Bing Crosby, I don't know if I would say, you know, there's a lot of star power in here, but man, this was a fun race to handicap. I thought there was a lot of ways you could go. And what I really came down to is there's not, especially for a California Grade 1 6-furlong race, there is not a lot of speed in here, right?
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I landed on Bag Boss for that reason.
Right. I mean, I picked Bag Boss for second. I mean, I got to see this horse at Churchill. Very impressive. Showed the ability to be able to go to the lead when the pace wasn't overly hot and win like he did on May 4th. And then sit off a hot pace on June 12th. Now, the horses he beat, Colton Ager, Ver, Burning Hunk of Love, Smoking Willie, those are nice horses. This is a significant step up. And he also has to prove the ship isn't an issue. I would need, to bet to win, 5-6. I don't know if we're going to get the 8-1. But he's a must-use for me. I landed on Drain the Clock, who, it isn't an overly strong opinion. I have these both as A's. But he's going to have a much different race shape this time than he did in the sprint of the Grade 3 at Gulfstream, where they really went at it early, setting it up for Willie Boy and others from off the pace. And he didn't even get off to a great start that day. So another horse that has to prove that he can run, win out there in Southern California. But he's traveled a lot. He's run some huge races. Maybe he has another. And thought it was an interesting rider decision. Drayden Van Dyke, not the most overly aggressive rider. I would want to see an aggressive ride based on the probable race shape in here. But those are my top two. And I did think Desmond Doss was a little bit interesting. He's a cowbred at a pretty good price. That effort in the Thor's Echo was pretty eye-popping to me off the bench for Steve Miotti. And then wired out of field at Los Alamitos last time out in Bertrando. Now cuts back. So the rail, a little bit tricky, but those are my top three.
It's a fun race. And like you said, we don't have necessarily household names in the sprint division. But, sometimes that's what happens. And we're looking, we got obviously Jackie's Warrior running in the Vanderbilt, and he'll be 2-5. So we're trying to find new sprinters to populate the division. And there's a few candidates that seem like they're knocking on the door. You mentioned Peter Miller, and Get Her Number, who showed real promise early on when winning the American Pharoah going long, has been kind of refashioned and refocused as a sprinter. And there's a few horses like that this weekend at a couple of different venues. And I'm sure we'll touch on New York Traffic at some point in the show, who has been completely redesigned sprinting. But Get Her Number, at least is looking like, as a four-year-old, could step forward again, and the 12-1 is very attractive from out there. The open air outside box, where the air is fresh and clear, the Marty McGee. So I know that I'm gonna include Get Her Number in the tabs.
Yeah, maybe I overlooked a little, because the number came back good on all metrics. Brisnet, Thoroughgraph. I mean, the career best on Briz, and you mentioned the outside. Visually, that race was pretty ugly, as Gunnett did everything he could, as he has so many times in his career, to hand the race to Get Her Number. But that was first race off a little bit of a freshening. The Triple Bend, this is just a horse that needs to get a little bit more into the race, especially this race because of the lack of speed, but maybe with a better break. And Ramon Vasquez, another guy that's riding pretty well out there in his first summer at Del Mar, he'll take the call here for the first time. Actually, the second time, I should say. He rode a Triple Bend.
Well, and came from off the pace. And I like that. I've talked for years about Ramon Vasquez. And this is his summer opportunity to, appeal to a wider audience.
Yeah, I think it was a great decision to go out there. I thought it was, there was definitely a need for a couple of veteran riders that could ride the turf in the dirt, and he seems to be making the most of it thus far. So definitely good for him, a very high quality rider.
Anything for the ninth, or do you want to skip to the San Diego?
The ninth looks like it could collapse. I'm not in love with Midnight Joester at a short price, but I landed on. But I'll be spreading in there. One Fast Bro, Liberal. I'm going to be using the horses that can finish in a race that I think should have a pretty honest pace, assuming no scratches. But, let's move to the San Diego, where, as you mentioned in the intro, that Country Grammar is going to be the favorite. You've got Mandaloon, who likely will be the second choice. respect them both. Andaloon, I just don't know what to make of them. You know, shipping out there, very disappointing effort in the Foster when reportedly had been training very well. Very tough for me to get excited about endorsing him. And I do think Country Grammar, obviously the class of the field, but maybe a mile and a 16th, a little sharp, and maybe, you know, the goal being, I mean, obviously Baffert Horse is very capable of winning off the layoff. But I would think the goal is next month. So I'm going to go to the stable maiden here, Defundit, who I've always thought has had a ton of talent, Steve. I thought maybe was a sprinter early on. I mean, the Pat Day Mile, I know, finished fourth, loomed up. That was one of the best races of the year last year, in my opinion, with Jackie's Warrior and Dream Shake. But really has impressed me to start his four-year-old season running in longer distance races. And I can't believe he held it together in the Gold Cup at a mile and a quarter for so long. Now you get him back to a mile and a 16th. I think he should be on the lead. There's some other speed in here, but I don't think there's a ton once again. And I'm going to take my chances that this is the funded day against, you know, some real high-quality horses. And also definitely going to use Tripoli, who second off the bench, got that nice tightener in the American, has run well over this course, obviously winning the Pacific Classic last year. Maybe a mile and a 16th, another one that's a little sharp for him, but he'll be a much better price than Country Grammar.
Makes sense.
And then in the 11th, pretty tough race. I'm not in love with the outside post, but the 12, Alba Yatter, I think I pronounced that right, maybe, had an absolutely terrible trip. First start in the States for Jeff Mullins. Got out of the gate slow, was loaded, and then got caught behind horses. Ended up being beaten just three lengths. Now stretches out to two turns, which the pedigree on both sides screams two turns. I think if Umberto Rispoli can avoid a wide trip like he did it with the winner in the finale yesterday, that this is the horse to beat. Pretty good price, 6-1, but plenty of ways to go to close out a very, very fun late pick five.
Very much. Shap, I appreciate it.
Yes, as always.
Well, Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Shap, 34 on Twitter, and part of course the Twin Spires BrizNet team, bringing you the action daily. You don't have to wait until the weekends to play on Twin Spires, and using BrizNet information. Shap, good luck. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend, Steve. Thanks, buddy.
Not at all, Scott Shapiro, everybody. And I look up, and here's Pat McKenna, who is joining us, and I'm happy to be back. Thanks for letting me back on the grounds.
I was going to say, where you been? Welcome back to Saratoga. See you on opening day, and then poof.
This was a funny, the way things have scheduled, it just, Haskell's always now, you know, right where it's going to be.
Yep.
And then the last 2 years, Colonial has you know, marched into the picture.
Okay.
And so we put them together, and then I went off on a lark on Wednesday to see the pony swim, Chincoteague Island.
Oh, okay. How was that?
Phenomenal. How old's your daughter?
She's five. She'll be five in August.
Well, she's getting to be almost ready for Misty of Chincoteague, the famous, you know, I want to say children's book. Okay. I think it skews, you know, excuse to female children.
Yeah.
Misty of Chincoteague, the wild horses, Assateague and Chincoteague.
Okay.
And I can tell that this is your eyes have glazed over.
No, I mean, I've seen pictures, I've read about it. I've always been curious to see. I mean, is it sort of wild? And
it's a silly. I don't want to say silly, because that's not fair. It's crazy. It's the craziest thing. Honestly, I haven't really expressed this yet. It's nuts. There's these wild horses are out on the island most of the year. This was the 79th time they've done it. The last 2 years they've done it privately and handled the culling. Essentially, they're culling babies out of the herd.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you know, they'll overtake Assateague, and they'll be everywhere. So they control the population. And it's funny, the Bureau of Land Management, who is constantly under critique for the way they manage, the wild horse population out west, this is really celebrated, and so they bring them in during this week. They take the babies and they sell the babies. There's an auction yesterday. People think, oh, they, how far did they swim? They swim, a few hundred yards, actually. The swim only takes 4.5 minutes. They bring them over a marshy part, and then where the tide has dropped.
Uh-huh.
And there's these saltwater cowboys, these guys on horseback that basically herd them and bring them in. And they cross this little channel, and they come up on land. They rest for 45 minutes, and then they parade them down Main Street of Chincoteague Island into a pen. They get penned, and there's a whole volunteer fireman fair. It is really sweet and charming.
Okay.
There are people covered in mud that went into the marsh to be as close as possible to them coming up on shore. We watched from a more genteel locale. It was funny. I mean, people started arriving at 4 a.m. We had to leave Williamsburg at 3:30 to get from Williamsburg to Chincoteague and be in position to then, shuttle to the, to the water. It was real. I'm glad we did it. I don't know if we'll be back again. Maybe we'll be back to Chincoteague when it doesn't take 18 to 20 minutes to go a block. I mean, the place is swarmed. I mean, swarmed. It's like the scene in, it's like the July 4th scene in Jaws on Amity Island. Amity, as you know, means friendship. And Chincoteague, I have no idea what Chincoteague means.
Well, how about this for a segue? Or like Saratoga Racecourse on the first giveaway day of the year.
Picnic blanket today.
Saratoga Casino Hotel sponsored picnic blanket.
You didn't bring me a picnic blanket.
I don't have one. I haven't seen one. Usually I get to test drive them, but not this year.
Let me tell you, I actually have them from probably 14 years ago that are in the Treasury Reserve of giveaways somewhere. I've got a couple.
Donate those to the Hall of Fame when the time is right.
Exactly, the museum. there's plenty of things for us to dive into, but one of the reasons I reached out to you, Dave Grenig, completely buried today. Otherwise, I would not have bothered you. The news that officially the Belmont Fall Meet, the championship meet, will take place at Aqueduct. You and I have hinted at this. Dave O'Rourke, we've had plenty of conversation about the commencing of the what will be the new refashioned Belmont Park. But I got to tell you, Pat, this felt like, a watershed kind of a moment to know that this is now underway.
Yeah, Belmont at the Big A. It does. It certainly signals the, hopefully, the beginning of a broad reimagining of the facility at Belmont Park. We're building these vehicular and pedestrian tunnels that will allow for fan access. Hopefully, we'll be able to provide the space to the community in and around Elmont and Belmont. That's important to us as well. But beyond the fan access, which is important, but really important on a few days a year, these tunnels will allow NYRA to completely reconstruct the main track, the two turf courses, and eventually install a fourth surface, a synthetic surface. At the same time, we are converting the pony track to a Tapeta Footings synthetic pony
training track.
Correct.
Wow.
The pony track.
The pony.
Yeah.
Just the
exactly.
Jog. The jog pad.
Yeah, and that's important because it'll give us a sense of how the newest synthetic surfaces perform in the Belmont climate. Also, give Glenn and his team the opportunity to really work with this material because there is a learning curve, and to be able to get it installed on the pony track, to be on hand, for the staff to be on hand to see that again, to work with it is important. So the Belmont at the Big A is how we are lovingly referring to the fall meet. It'll run from September 15th to October 30th, and we're looking forward to it. This is, obviously we appreciate the patience of the horsemen, because this will clearly have an impact. We're working closely with NYTHA to, you know, to do everything we can to make sure that there is adequate training space, essentially. You know, what that will look like, we don't quite know yet, but we'll certainly keep the main track up here at Saratoga open for you know, for a few extra weeks or an extra month. We'll you know, and there's a number of things we can do, but change is difficult, and we get that, but this is about the future. This is about, you know, decades to come, and that's why it's so important. So, you know, appreciate the patience of the fans who had intended on being a beautiful Belmont Park, but we love Aqueduct, and we're looking forward to, you know, seeing what this fall will look like. The other thing to mention is, this goes back 4 or 5 years, we're prepared for this because we made these investments into Aqueduct to add 2 new turf courses, to redo the main track. Without that, you know, this is a very different kind of a conversation. So, fortunately, we have Aqueduct. Those surfaces are as good as any in the country, and we're looking forward to a big fall.
Dave Grenick wrote the extensive story, essentially, that lays out, you know, some of the differences and some of the unique aspects of this conversion, and of course, or this transfer. This is not, you know, this is not something that is unprecedented by any means, because of course you go back to the late 50s and into the 60s, and the rebuilding of both the facilities of Belmont and Aqueduct had flip-flop the same way, and historic races, including the Jockey Club Gold Cups, were run, of course now they're being run here, but you know, was transferred over to Aqueduct while Belmont was being remodeled and refreshed, and then you know, the Aqueduct seasons that were run for what was it, 2 years at Belmont. I've got a few pictures in my sort of treasury that things like the Jockey Club, you know, that says Jockey Club Gold Cup at Aqueduct, and okay. And you know, there'll be a lot of interesting analysis and you know, historic references over this period, Pat. It'll be very interesting.
And the, you know, this hopefully is step one, because remember, we're focused on building a new Belmont Park, a completely new grandstand, a new facility. It's well past time for that. We were not successful in getting the requisite legislation done this past session, but we're focused on getting that into the budget, and we're already working to do that. So, you know, yeah, and then the future of racing downstate, you know, this is no secret that eventually the future of racing downstate is at one facility. We envision that to be Belmont Park as a year-round facility. So this is hopefully step one in kind of the recreation of Belmont in a way that honors the history and traditions of one of racing's most important facilities.
Belmont fall meeting, 28 days, and so basically September 15th to April 10th, April till after Wood.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to have plenty more, I'm sure, to talk about it. I saw some quotes Dave Grenick had talked to some trainers, you know, including, frankly, the biggest issue is the closing of the main track for training. I mean, that's the thing that is probably the most important part of this.
Yep. So the main track will close on August 7th, and the training track will reopen on August 8th, so there will be no gap in terms of the training track, which has been closed for maintenance, but it's beyond maintenance. I mean, Glenn and his team do obviously a fantastic job while balancing everything up here at Saratoga. So I've seen some images. It looks fantastic. And, you know, again, we'll work with the horsemen to make sure that everything is running smoothly and safely, and everyone has the space and time to run their businesses and to train these horses.
Belmont at Aqueduct.
Belmont at the Big A.
Belmont at the Big A.
Thank you.
Okay. We can't say Aqueduct?
Belmont at the Big A. That's what we're... Come on. I mean, it's really just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
I guess.
Okay.
While I've got you, a couple more minutes before Jay Pribman joins us. Callie Francois, by the way. Callie will join us after Jay Pribman, who's next. And Callie is going to give us a quick hit on the Laurel Stakes. And then James Scully as well in hour two. Coming to you from Saratoga. And Pat McKenna sitting across. What have I missed, Pat? Is there anything special that needs to be communicated that people need to know? They're planning coming for the weekend, and we've had a couple of weather hiccups. That is not unusual in these parts.
No, I'm trying to think. We're opening up the second floor, the paddock suite, the second floor of the post bar on select days. That'll be available. Individual tables are available. If people are here on track, check in at the porch, at the host stand at the porch. That's a good little factoid because that's a fantastic space. I think everyone that that has seen it has been really impressed. I mean, it fits in seamlessly. I think it's a great addition.
Yeah. That whole dialogue completely evaporated after opening day. It was funny.
Yep.
It was, the people like, did you see it? Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
Oh, it's ruining the... No, it's really nice, and it was not even worth a second of the geschreying that went on. Other than that, terrific weekend on tap. Whitney weekend next week. Essentially for people that kind of forgot how this meet works, the 4 weeks in August continue to be, despite all the good things that go on in mid-July from opening till through this week, through Sunday, it is really next Wednesday and beyond it still is the the absolute focus.
Yeah.
And there's still people that'll arrive and spend the next 4 to 5 weeks, starting with Whitney Week. The sale, of course, the two sales are on tap as well. So we got a lot ahead, Pat, and I just did not want this detail from yesterday, the news breaking officially about the Belmont fall season.
It's still the August place to be for you, considering your travels.
It is.
You are now one of those people that shows up on Jim Dandy or Whitney Week.
What? You're taking. You must be taking clues from Serling.
No, I notice it every year. There's Steve. We won't see him again for a few weeks.
Unbelievable.
And traveling man.
Serling's ridiculous. I mean, last night we're driving back, and he calls like at 9:30. I'm available to him when he's walking back from dinner from downtown to his apartment.
Uh-huh.
That's when he'll deign to call me for 10 minutes, and he says, "Well, where are you going next?" He says, "You headed to Fairmont. You headed to I could have gone to Fairmont actually on our way to Indiana."
Woodbine.
Well, I gotta say, I wouldn't mind going to a Queens Plate. I will absolutely say that, but I don't think it's in the offing.
Okay.
Pat McKenna, everybody, PC McKenna, and Pat does his best to answer your polite questions on social media.
Yes, indeed.
PC McKenna, everybody, Pat, thanks so much for this.
All right, Steve.
Pat McKenna, folks. Let's take a break, our first of two on the morning, and let's get a picture of Pat because everyone wants to see what Pat's wearing around the racetrack. And Pat will be escorting Dave O'Rourke, right, on Sunday. You promised O'Rourke for Sunday at Loose on the Lead. All right. Not only will Dave O'Rourke be on Loose on the Lead, David Harrison, the NHC champion, is going to be, and he's going to be here with me in hour three. There you go. Dale Romans and Tammy are lurking. So Jay Pribman is next, but we may have to slip in a hello from Big D, from Dale Romans. We'll take a break. Hour two at the races. Sonny Taylor, did you see the picture I took of you? You're not a big social media guy. I took a picture of you. I'll show it to you. I'll send it to you. Do you have a phone? Do you have a... No, but I got a photo of you when you walked by and you were smiling. It was out of this world. Back after this, third weekend of Saratoga in the offing on this Friday after this crazy week. Jay Pribman is next, and there may be a little Dale Romans. And there's Dale Romans continues to get littler. This is the incredible shrinking Dale. Back after this.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer.